even though I create art pieces for, you know, private commissions and things like that, I love design. Like, I just love functionality as well as beautiful art. So I like it when they meet in the middle.
That's Emily Forgot, and this is the On Design podcast. Hi everyone, and welcome to the new episode of the On Design podcast. I'm your host, Justina Green. I'm an illustrator, and I've also spent the past 10 years in the design industry in various roles. On this podcast, every week we speak to the most exciting people in design right now. We learn what inspires them, how they work, and how they see the world. In today's episode, I speak to Emily Forgot, who's an illustrator, artist, and designer with a multidisciplinary practice. In our conversation, Emily discusses her love of working with design, interiors, and architecture to create experiences which are tactile, they're two- or three-dimensional, and really beautifully fall into the category of what we'd call functional art. Emily also tells me about her love of creating memories and going down the rabbit hole of design and architecture history. Our chat is also a brilliant pep talk on following your heart and your passion. So if you feel in need of a pick-me-up, and honestly, who isn't right now, then this is just chat for you. Enjoy. As I was just saying just before we started to record, I love your designs, love your aesthetic, and you also run Muse and Maker. And I feel like every time I see designs and people you profile, I feel very wholesome. I have that wonderful feeling of things, designs, thoughts that are timeless and that don't go away.
That's so nice.
Don't
to
fade
hear.
Away. yeah, that's exactly the vibe, you know. And so that's why I was super excited to be able to speak to you and to find out more about your journey and your inspirations as well. So I think firstly, the first question I have to ask, it's why Emily Forgot?
Yeah, I get this one a lot actually, but it's not very interesting. Well, it kind of is just
oh darn.
No, it's just as a student, so when I had to set up a portfolio website, I just didn't want to use my surname, which is Alston. I just thought it was a bit boring, so it was almost like a sort of branding exercise, and I started thinking about some of my more endearing traits, and one of them happened to be forgetfulness, which a lot of people would say, you know, it's not the best way to introduce yourself to a client, but it kind of stuck and now I can't get rid of it. But then I was like thinking about it a bit more since you about, like, I don't know, it seems like my work is a lot about actually remembering things and like the past, and like a lot of like, for example, when you're talking about Muse and Maker, I'm often looking at design history, and then a lot of my work tends to be about kind of memories and about trips and visits and turning them into pieces. So it seems almost like the opposite of forgetfulness. It's kind of remembering things, so maybe I'll have like a second wind and be Emily Remembers. But at the moment, yeah, it's like Emily Forgot seems to have stuck, and I've had it for like over 15 years. I mean, that's actually, I graduated a long time ago, so I set up the domain in 2004, and I've just been operating under that kind of unusual moniker since then. Yeah, I mean, it's fine now. It feels like who I am.
And do you feel yeah, and I was about to ask, do you feel like it helps you kind of split the idea of this is personal versus this is my design output?
Well, I would say that they really have got closer and closer in terms of, I used to have a big divide between commercial work and personal work. And I would say now, they're pretty much the same thing often, which is kind of what I wanted to achieve. Like, for a long time, I felt like my work didn't have me in it. When I was working on commercial projects, you know, there's always going to be boundaries from the client, whether it's like colour or even like the content of the work. And I've slowly sort of been able to bring in my own like interests and passions. And so, yeah, those two things definitely feel like they're more often than not the same, which is good.
That's a wonderful place to be in, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But it's, I think a lot of people think you can get there straight away. And like, I think it's important that it's been a long, long journey. And I wouldn't say I really got there until I did my own solo show in, I think it was 2016, as part of the design festival. And that felt like quite a big mm-hmm. moment for me to be producing my own stuff that really felt like I owned it, like it was me. Because I'd say before then, often when you're in design, you're tailoring things to other people, which is great, because actually that's what you should be doing. You shouldn't just be forcing yourself onto a project when it's a client's project. You really have to be thinking about what they want to portray, and it's about them. But there's always this like artist inside you that wants to kind of showcase what you're about and what you do. So, yeah, and what your interests are. So, yeah.
That's very interesting. And I feel like we will loop back to it as well. And as we talked about kind of where you're at now and also the kind of solo show, I was wondering if you you could tell me more about your upbringing and if it was creative. Have you always wanted to be an artist, a designer? And what was your journey to establishing your practice?
Yeah, I think so I was brought up in a creative household. I do always wonder if I wasn't aware of art and design, whether, you know, it was very open to me. It was an option. I can see how for many people growing up, it seems like a closed door. But it wasn't for me, because my dad was actually a curator in Sheffield. So I was kind of brought up in a gallery environment, which is quite unusual, I suppose, and always encouraged, you know, express myself. And I think I was always interested in design, actually. So I'd actually do like comic strips and book covers. And I think I was interested in more like physical things and objects. So, and I used to collect a lot of things, like badges and buttons and postcards. So, yeah, this sort of material world was always interesting to me.
So that's very interesting. So was your dad a fine art curator? Yet then you were influenced to, or your own influences came through as a focus on materiality.
Yeah, so I don't think I was interested in being an artist. I liked seeing how creativity was used in a different way. I don't think I even really, when I was in that gallery environment, I don't think I was even really noticing the paintings. I was more like, I liked the gift shop and you know, the like pencils and rubbers and pencil cases with the branding on that you could get. It's funny that those things, like I remember those really vividly. So the design world wasn't really what I was part of. I didn't really know that. I didn't realize when I was like doing a comic book or creating a book cover that was a different kind of creativity. Like but then I find art and design quite interesting. I find that I like how design, perhaps there's a bit less snobbery around it. I like that it feels like more of a democratic area of creativity. I like that it's got a function apart from, you know, just to be observed. I like that side of it as well. So I always, even though I create art pieces for, you know, private commissions and things like that, I love design. Like I just love functionality as well as beautiful art. So I like it when they meet in the middle.
That's very interesting. And I guess that's the niche that you've carved, where
would you call it, are we entering the realm of functional art, or we don't really need names, kind of, do we? Kind of to kind of labels.
Yeah, I mean, I really like that label though. I've always seen I've always seen the beauty, like, you know, I love a chair, or like a, you know, I love objects and I love things that have function, but then also just really creative and interesting. So I'd like to be in that area, the functional art world. So yeah, maybe that is what I'm operating within, and I'm happy to be there.
And where do you feel you've discovered fully your kind of yourself, or started to discover yourself? Was it when you were studying, and kind of what did you study? How did you come to creative you are?
Yeah, I did illustration and graphic design, and I think I've been on quite a sort of windy path. I did a graphic arts course, and I was always sort of ping pong balling between the two disciplines of graphic design and illustration. And I didn't really know where I was going to land or what I was going to be, which felt a bit like a problem. But then I think that's what's led to having a more multidisciplinary practice, and actually being able to turn my hand to different things. So, and I see it as a positive now, the fact that maybe I'd be approaching designing a chair as someone with an illustrative or graphic design background, that's going to influence the outcome. So I think I used to feel like, oh, where do I belong? I'm not a typical traditional illustrator. You know, my graphic design doesn't stick to the rules. You know, who am I? What am I making? And it was just like a really organic kind of journey, make mistakes, figure things out. I had a year where I only took on design projects, and I just felt miserable, like graphic design projects, so branding for other people and stuff, and it just didn't feel right for me. So I tried on like lots of pairs of shoes, and I never really actually had a proper job, like a salaried job, so I never had that experience where I had, so it's a shame because I never had that mentorship that I was really craving, I think, at the time. But then I never had that fear of going freelance, because I was always sort of in that area. So I was supplementing my income with working in bars, waiting until I had enough projects to be able to leave doing that kind of work, and just slowly building things up, slowly trying things out, and not feeling that pressure as much. I mean, it's obviously a pressure because you're like earning no money and like scrambling around, but I always felt content, like I was just following my own path. But yeah, I mean,
that was my next question. It was about the kind of the, because the journey you're describing, it's can be very challenging if you've like never held a job in a way that you've never had a mentor kind of officially in the workplace, and then juggling other paid work with your design work. But you just mentioned that you were very content being on your own path. Where do you think you had the confidence that was the right thing to do?
Do you know what? I have no idea, because I wouldn't particularly say like I'm a really confident person. But when it comes to my own design and my own creativity, it's like one area that I feel like I don't really question it. It just feels like innate, you know, like it's just, I'm meant to be doing this. This is what I'm good at. Like, I don't think I could be or anything else. So I never had like worries about that. I mean, initially, I think I would have loved to have had, like you said, a mentor, and would be working in a studio and have a better understanding of how things work and the rules and things like that. But in a way, I think I've always ended up where I'm meant to be, but it might have just been a different path. Like, I would have always ended up freelance. I would have always ended up working for myself, but it might have taken a different route. But I think I'm just where I'm meant to be. I did actually have a job for a short while in a design studio called Love, and they created a lot of the they created all the flyers for Fabric, the nightclub. So I was working mm-hmm. for them, but doing a lot of illustration. So a lot of like collage illustration and stuff like that. And I knew that that was an area that I really enjoyed, the illustration side of it. It's just, it's very rare that you would find a full-time job in a studio being an illustrator. So it just didn't really pan out that way. But I think that was a really, if I'm looking for some kind of area that I had mentorship, it would have been there, because I remember just little moments like being encouraged by John, who was the director of the company, to look through books before starting a project. Like, he had such a great library of old like graphis annuals and you know, just amazing vintage graphic design. And I'd always done that anyway. Like, when I was at university, I was basically in the library all the time looking at that kind of stuff and looking at the past a lot, not in a way to be like nostalgic or you know, to create things that are pastiche of the past, but I just think it's got more value than looking at your peers, like, to create something different. And if you are, like, I'm quite heavily inspired by things outside of myself. Like, I'm not ashamed to say that I find it quite difficult just to look within myself. It's this combination of within myself, but then all these outside influences that kind of collide together, and through your own kind of lens, you create something different. But I would never say like I'm not influenced by things. I think it might be a bit of a myth that there might be some people that just have that magic moment, but mine's often this idea you're just collecting things through life that then allow you to have that magic moment. So yeah, it being encouraged to research and to immerse myself in other things outside of what was happening at the time, you know, in graphic design and illustration, looking at, you know, it was probably the beginnings of blogs where people were sharing current work. And now it must be so much harder with Instagram for people to try and find an original voice, because you're just bombarded with what everyone else is doing and trends and styles and how things look. But it was quite nice to not be coming out, you know, to be graduating when the internet wasn't what it was. Instagram didn't exist. So, yeah.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Because you're describing the process of exposing yourself to visuals, information, inspiration in general, and then kind of that brewing within you to then you become that prism. Through which the information and inspiration goes through and comes up with something new. And now it's almost, like you mentioned with Instagram, it's unavoidable that you're not necessarily completely choosing what you put in, but you're exposed to a lot regardless. Yeah. And I think it's like part of a job now is to, whenever you're creating new work, is to realize, is this me or have I seen it somewhere? Or have I picked up influences without even knowing?
I think it's so much harder now, like so much harder. And I love looking at what other things are happening outside of myself. Like I really enjoy seeing new design. But I think that's why I enjoy looking at design history as well, because it's not about copying something that happened in the past, but it's like, you feel this weird sort of kinship with things that you might see from design history. You almost feel like, wow, I could have made that now. Or like when you see things that were so innovative for the time, it's something that just makes me like really like buzzing with excitement, which is why I share those kind of things on my Instagram and through my newsletter with Muse and Maker, because I just want to kind of like share the joy, because it really makes me happy. And it's so nice when other people are like, wow, just about a chair or something. But it's just that kind of innovation, I think. And like, instead of feeling daunted by amazing design from the past, I feel encouraged by it. I feel like, wow, you can create great things. Like it makes me happy. It makes me like feel like anything's possible, rather than feel like, oh, I'll never achieve that, or I'll never be good enough. Like, I don't know if that's because I'm like a positive person, but yeah, I just feel encouraged by seeing great design and history, and that I'm on the right path, and that you can be inspired by things, but it's about like a wide variety of things. And like you said, it's about how you kind of transform that through your own lens. So it's a bit like cooking. Like, people could have the same ingredients, but it's about the way that you season it, it's the way that you put things together, it's the way that makes the magic more. And I kind of like the alchemy of it all. And also, once you admit that things don't come from nowhere, that you're inspired, there feels like less of a pressure, like that things can be, maybe like you reference something, but it doesn't look like that thing, but people can see where it came from. And then, I don't know, it's an interesting area, because I think sometimes things,
it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was thinking about it as well, that I think there is the myth, and maybe especially for people starting out, where it's kind of you sitting idly and it's all coming from within you magically.
Yeah.
And I think I found that there's just, when you focus on the richness of the world, either as it is right now or through history, you realize you didn't, in some ways, you don't need to come up with anything, because it's all miraculous around us. Even if it's the tiniest detail from nature, or it's a pebble, or the line of the coast.
Yeah, exactly. And it's how you piece things together. And it's how you notice things, and how, you know, it's about like seeing things instead of just looking. I like that term. Like, it's just being really open to the world around you and noticing things, because I think we can have our blinkers on a lot of the time. But I mean, like, I wouldn't have, so I started making the relief artwork that I do when I did that first show, and like, I was looking at old pictures of the studio, and I've got like work of Jean Arp on the pinned up on the wall, and I think some, is it Louise Nevelson? Yeah, I think. So like, I'd been looking at people that were making relief work. Part of me had thought like I wanted to find a way for my illustrations to have depth, and to, because I was interested in creating more dimension. So it was coming from me, but I had seen people make relief work before. I knew that I wasn't like inventing something. But then, you know, my interest in architecture and interiors and spaces fed into that. And then also, my color palette is very personal, I feel, to me. So bringing all those things together, then I felt like I'd created something that might not be like incredibly original, but for me, it felt new. And for me, it felt actually like it belonged to me. Whereas I think sometimes, I think, you know, if you're creating something and it's like derivative of something else, like you feel it, like you feel like this doesn't feel right. And you know, when you hit that area where you're like, this feels like me, this is my work. But I can honestly say, I think it took a long time to get to that point, and a lot of experimentation.
Do you feel there were any pivotal moments that made you progress farther and kind of faster into, or become the designer and artist who you are? Certain influences or moments in life?
There was a great job that I got quite early on with Selfridges, and I did some window displays for them. And so that was the first time that I'd worked where like my 2D artwork became something dimensional. And I just remember how thrilling I found that, like having drawn something and then to actually be standing inside it. Like, I know that feeling. I was like, this is what I want to do. Like, forever, because that felt like that sort of alchemy that I was talking about, that sort of magic where you've imagined something and then you're physically in it. So it felt like I wanted to create more like sensory kind of experiences rather than something that's just looked at. I really like that idea of, I think that's why I love interiors and spaces and architecture so much, because you actually physically inhabit the art, like you, or you're using it, or you're sitting on it, or you're touching it. Like, I just think that that's, for me, that's like the most interesting area. But yeah, I think, yeah, that's where I find my happiness working.
You know what? That's beautiful. And I can hear so much joy in your voice just as you talk about it. And it's just like so encouraging. And we're recording this on a Monday morning. And I feel like if anybody had a pep talk from you on Monday mornings, we'd feel all so much better, because it feels like you're just an amazing example of a person who follows their intuition and their passion and curiosity.
Oh, thank you so much.
Good things coming from it. It just, yeah, it just really, really resonates and comes through. And I wanted to talk more about that. You've just spoken so beautifully now about the inhabiting the art when you work with interiors and with architecture. Mm. And can you tell me about some of the beautiful kind of moments around interiors architecture that you've experienced or that have influenced your work, or when your work started to move kind of more into that dimensional work? Yeah. And then where does travel come in?
Yeah, it's interesting actually, because obviously with the pandemic, it's meant like no travel. And I used to think that that was like, that was where I got the spark from, was like visiting places. And, you know, it's almost like when you're on holiday, it's almost like you have a different set of eyes on, because you are just a lot more aware of your surroundings. And you notice, you know, like street signs and colors, and you're just more sensitive almost to things. And I think that the pandemic and being just in the same place for over a year can just really affect that spark that you look for in other places. But then I also feel like that's meant I've had to rely on my own imagination more and my memories more. And then also, just even though we haven't been able to travel, I do feel lucky that you can go on those sort of, you can feel like you've traveled when you've gone down an internet rabbit hole. And so I've had to rely a bit more on that. But in the past, places I've been that have really inspired me have been like, I went to visit Eileen Gray's villa in France, and that was amazing. And I also managed to wangle a trip to Ricardo Bofill's Fabrica, where he's got his home and his offices. And that was incredible as well. And also, there's quite a few places where you can just get an Airbnb. So actually, one of Ricardo Bofill's most Instagrammable buildings is the Murella Roja, which is like a pink building that just has a very sort of labyrinth kind of feel to it. It's used in a lot of photo shoots, and we actually stayed in an Airbnb in one of the apartments in that block. That was amazing. So I do miss that a lot, and I've already got like a list of places I want to go as soon as we can travel again. And actually a really good friend of mine has a book called Modernist Escapes, Steffi Orazi. She runs a platform called Modernist Estates, and it actually lists, I don't know if there's like, it's probably over 100, I don't know how many properties are in there, but they're all places that you can visit and you can actually stay, or you can at least visit for the day. You might not be able to stay over, but I've already made like a long list from that book of all the places I want to go to, so that's something to look forward to.
And so would you say that travel is part of your creative process. And could you describe your creative process? Because we know that your one of your mentors encouraged you to go through books before you start designing. Now we're talking about travel as well. So what would you say your process is?
So my process is, it depends on the project, but often, as an example, like I'm working on some private commissions for a hotel in Mexico at the moment. So I knew that they wanted something that was architectural feeling, assemblage that I normally do. But then, so automatically I can go down an internet rabbit hole of Mexican architecture, discovering amazing designers that were, usually I like that sort of modernist period, but you know, it's I just like, I'm just curious, and then whatever pops up can throw up some exciting, you know, designers and architecture that I've never seen before. So the process always starts with discovery, I suppose. I'm looking for something that will provide a springboard for whatever I'm going to make. Like, I always start with research. So even if the final piece, you wouldn't be able to tell who the architect was or what I'd been looking at to create it, it will always start with some kind of reference point. I don't just sit with a empty notepad and a pencil waiting for, you know, something to strike. I definitely am looking, like always looking, always searching for something. But it's quite rare that I'd be like, oh, I'm going to go to Mexico and be inspired, or, you know, that's not often possible, although that would be lovely if it was. I kind of like that idea that without the internet, people used to travel a lot more and bring back inspiration. And now I think we rely perhaps too heavily on the internet. But yeah, nothing beats actually visiting places and experiencing them in real. But I am massively into the internet as well. I just love, like, just discovering weird, you know, you don't know where you're going to end up, and you just follow things, and then you find an amazing designer, and then you're Googling that. And then, you know, actually, though, my favorite is going to a library. I really love going to the RIBA library, the RIBA library. And just sometimes it's even just sitting, because you're not allowed to put away the books, you have to leave them on the table. Sometimes it might just be sitting where someone else has sat and picking up the books that they've been looking at. You know, like not even having a specific goal. Like if I've got a free day and I can just spend it in that library and just kind of meander around with no real purpose, I mean, that is a day well spent in my book. I just absolutely love it. I'm a proper geek.
No, but that's brilliant. And again, I feel like there's so much more now, just almost is turning into top tips for designers, kind of to like get the inspiration, so that, you know, how to try new things as well, to kind of get the cogs working again after what you said, you know, after a year that could have been really hard for creativity.
Yeah. It's definitely, you're right. I like the way you say about getting the cogs working, because that's the way I see when you're looking at books or finding references or using the internet. It's about getting the cogs working. It's about finding a little spark of something within something that might, you know, push something in a different direction. So it's knowing that when you're doing this research and looking, that that's exactly what you're doing. You're just like getting started, and it's not going to necessarily influence the outcome completely, but a little part of it might. And then you puzzle all these pieces together, and then you have that moment where it all fits. And that's the moment that you're always looking for. So yeah, I like that idea of getting the juices flowing and the cogs working, and that's exactly
What I really love as well is, because I was thinking about, you know, my own creative process, kind of, oh, like how does this head and mind thing work? And I found what works is similar to yours, where I would just load up lots of information into my mind, whether it's looking at lots of things, reading stuff, and then just leave it there. So never then sit down straight to creating stuff, but just leave it there and go for a walk or go for a run. And because I think there's parts that we do consciously, but it's everything that's happening that we're not aware of. That I think that's where the magic happens.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's not false that, you know, if you just go for a walk or like try and not think about the brief for a time, that's often when, you know, when you're just in the shower or when you're just like pottering around, then the idea might come of which direction to take. It's definitely something you can't force, and you just have to believe that it will come, because otherwise you'd get really stressed out. So I always try and make sure, I hate being rushed on projects. So I know some people just love being like really, really busy, but I like time. I like time to know I'm going to have to think about things and to allow those moments of like going for a walk or going for a run, or like you said, just allowing it to happen, which luckily, you know, I've never got to a point where I haven't come up with something in time. And sometimes the pressure of a deadline, you know, it forces you to come up with something. But it's really nice to make sure that if you're meant to come up with an idea, that you have like a couple of weeks to do it, not days, because it can take a while. And also, I don't see being not being idle, but like I used to think that you had to fill your time with doing things, but actually you can be at your most productive when you're not doing anything, because you're allowing things to like ruminate. And I know that's a luxury, because I remember doing talks before and people from design agencies going like, but we're not given the time, you know, we're like, come up with this idea by the end of the day. Like, you haven't got the time to go down an internet rabbit hole, have a walk. Like, you know, it just sounds like a real luxury, but I don't think I'm as interested in like, my time is money and it needs to be productive at all moments. I just want to live a nice life and I want to be as creative as I can be. And hopefully that, you know, will pay off. But yeah, it's like where my priorities are. But it's a luxury. But it's a luxury that I've bought over time. And also, it's important to note that I didn't feel this way when I first started. I've been doing this for like 15, 16 years, and I feel like I've earned the luxury of the time a bit more. Whereas before, I would say like when I first started out, I was literally just cramming every moment, wanted to do everything, wanted to like, you know, I felt like a lot more pressure. But I don't know, as you get older, the way that you want to live your life becomes more important than a kind of success that you weren't really sure what success was. You know, you define it differently, I think, later on in life, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, that the notion of success changes, because I think it's only natural when we're younger for example, work focused or like career and output focused, whilst now really you're talking about quality of life.
Yeah, and focusing on input, you know, you can't, I think there's only so much it can be output, and then you've got to think more about the input, which can mean doing nothing. or I don't know. I think it's not that I'm not hungry for it anymore, but I feel like one of my probably most successful years, where people were like, oh, you're so busy, you're doing so many things, I was like exhausted and unenthusiastic about what I was doing, and I was tired and I was pretty miserable, and I'd traveled loads and I'd done some great projects, but I was so stressed out. And I just thought, well, it might look outwardly successful, but like I'm sort of crying in a corner, that's not right. And so the pandemic, actually, in a lot of ways, because it took away a lot of opportunities and it took away a lot of expectation. I kind of felt this weird calmness because I'd had quite a hectic year leading up to it, and I just felt like time felt different, and I actually enjoyed, I mean, obviously it's awful, but I enjoyed the time that I got back, and I think it's really impacted, and it will going forward, like how I think about time and productivity and my work. Yeah,
that's really interesting and a lovely thought to kind of start slowly, you know, winding us down, because like you said, it's I think, you know, it's safe to assume that the pandemic has been a horrible thing that happened across the world, and that's granted. And now it's, you know, if we are among the people who have the privilege to for it to not hugely affect us, then I think it's all about making decisions or having realizations that can then help us and then others as well to pivot kind of in the right direction or in the more authentic direction. And I think it's, well, I strongly believe that it's okay to talk about it and to talk about, you know, how maybe we've changed or the positives that we've had. Yeah. As long as we don't lose the sight of the reality of it as well, which I don't think anybody is at all.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like the caveat is like, it's awful. But then I think in terms of like it can't not change you in whatever way. Like it changes the way you think about life and time and yeah, I mean, that first, when the pandemic first hit, all of my commercial jobs evaporated, and I was left thinking, well, I'm kind of lucky that I have my own personal projects and I make my own work. And it was really encouraging that I think people were really supportive of artists at that time, and I sold more prints, and I and I felt like, well, I can support myself, like I don't always have to rely on a commission. And that was a bit of a realization, because sometimes you don't feel like you've got a job until someone's giving it to you, but actually you're responsible for creating it. Like, that felt like a bit of a realization, like, wow, I can earn a living if I just make stuff and instigate that myself. It's not always about waiting for that email or phone call from someone else. So that was pretty huge.
That's super top advice again. Yeah, totally. And to take us out on a positive note, I have one question for you. So we know that you're working on works for a hotel in Mexico. And I have two questions. What other things you're working on now? And what's one thing you'd love to design, but you haven't had the chance to do so yet?
Yeah, so actually some really nice projects. I'm doing some rug designs for Floor Story. So I should have those coming out soon.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, really nice. They're kind of, so it's, I've done some stuff through them before, which was actually for a commercial project for a department store. And I worked with them on creating almost quite similar to my assemblage relief pieces. So working with different like tuft heights to create something similar to the wooden pieces that I make. So yeah, that should be really fun. So I've got those coming out soon-ish. I'm not sure when. And I've also got two big installations that are currently in the workshop being built, and they will be up, I think, in June, but it might be, yeah, it should be June. We're not quite I'm not quite sure about the install dates yet, but they're in, one's in Shoreditch and one is it's in a place called City Point, which is kind of nearish the Barbican. They're both in like plazas that are where big office spaces are, so they're almost there to welcome people back to the office, and yeah, that should be really fun. They're huge pieces, functional seating kind of areas, very colorful, hopefully, you know, kind of
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, they were really fun to work on, so yeah, that'll be nice. I'm excited. It's always like quite a scary moment when it's out of your hands now. It's being built in the workshop. So you've just got to like cross your fingers that you got all the measurements correct, because there's quite a lot of maths involved in like, you know, figuring things out. But yeah, that they were really interesting to design, and hopefully we'll, you know, every project, you're only as good as your last project. So I'm hoping that this will open more doors and more opportunities, because I haven't actually done that much spatial design. I did a maze during one of the design festivals at Citizen M Hotel, and that was one of my first things that people actually could walk into and physically, you know, be in the space. But yeah, so hopefully they should be good. So kind of enough happening to keep me excited, and yeah
lots happening, and I really can't wait to see those pieces, and I hope we can get to meet in person as well, because it's been just so inspiring to chat to you. And I know I might even preface it on social that if somebody needs a pep talk, this and optimism, this is the podcast to listen to.
Oh, that is so
because
nice.
It's just no, honestly, and thank you so much for your time, Emily. It's been enlightening, and yeah, and I just can't wait to see your new pieces.
Oh, thank you so much, Justina. That's so nice to hear, because often you feel like what you're doing is quite selfish, and I've thought like I'd really like to be able to give something back to people, and like if there's any kind of nuggets of something that, you know, can be encouraging to someone who's maybe at the start of what they're doing or not feeling very enthusiastic at the moment, that would be, you know, magic. So that's good.
I loved chatting with Emily and really love her optimism and joy which came through in our conversation. And I hope you've enjoyed it too and found comfort in our chat and also some company, as we all know that being a creative and especially freelancing can sometimes be a really lonely experience, unfortunately. But thankfully, don't you worry, we have each other and we have this podcast community for which I'm actually really, really grateful. So thank you for being here and tuning in, whether you're a regular or this is the first episode you're listening to. And I also wanted to let you know that this is the last but one episode in this series before the podcast goes on a summer break. And while the podcast does that, I'll be diving into a new project. It's an illustration project and it's called 100 Days of Gratitude. And in this project, I'll be attempting to create 100 illustrations in 100 days. Yep, you heard that right. And I'll be illustrating gratitude of 100 people who work in creative industries. So I would actually love to draw what you're grateful for. And in next week's episode, right at the end, I'll let you know how you can get involved. And if you want to keep in touch before the next episode lands, you can follow me on Instagram at Justina Green. Right, so that's all for this episode. Have a great week and bye for now.